And it wasn't just this treaty he signed with Al-Hakam. It was also the fact that Basil had now imposed imperial authority through the whole of the Balkans, through Asia Minor and northern Syria, so that most Western European pilgrims who couldn't afford the expensive sea journey could travel down the Danube, largely under imperial protection, across Asia Minor, cross the frontier near Antioch, enter the domains of the Fatimid Caliph, who was an ally of the Emperor in Constantinople, and make their way to Jerusalem. Now, I have a separate lecture dealing with the whole tradition of pilgrimage in Western Europe. But in the late 10th and early 11th century, as a result of Basil's successes, as a result of Basil's treaty with the Caliph, the numbers of Western European pilgrims increased steadily. Large numbers of them traveled to the east to see the holy shrines, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the various pilgrimage tourist sites in Bethlehem. And when this pilgrimage is cut off in the 1070s and 1080s, its impact in Europe is going to be immediate. It's going to be disrupted, and it comes at a point where pilgrimage had been increasing for well over 50 years. In addition to that, Basil also was responsible for promoting an enormous amount of exchange among the various churches of Eastern Christendom. Basil himself, without any imperial ambitions to recover these areas, however, encouraged the movement of architects, hymnologists, prelates between the Byzantine world and the Eastern Orthodox worlds that were under Muslim control. These resulted in some really remarkable exchange. For instance, in 996, the Dome of Hagia Sophia, which was built by Justinian, was restored through the efforts of an Armenian architect, a man named Tiridates in Greek, commissioned and brought in by Basil. So even though Armenians and Byzantines are supposed to be at odds with each other on religious or at least theological grounds, in terms of the more practical and daily matters of faith, they were quite a great deal in common. There's also the dissemination of objects, relics, traditions of martyrs that spread across the whole Eastern world. The most extraordinary example of this is in Ethiopia, which remained a separate Christian kingdom, long cut off from the Byzantine world because the Muslims controlled Egypt and Arabia and Syria. And nonetheless, Ethiopia maintains this contact in its painting, in its use of Greek as a liturgical language, well into the Middle Ages in Basil's reign and beyond. So that Basil's empire was really the epitome of this Orthodox Byzantine Commonwealth. Now, these are extraordinary achievements for the Emperor Basil II. And as I stress, he's not alone in allowing this to happen. He's drawn upon precedents. He had predecessors who assisted. But when he died in 1025, most Christians clearly regarded him as the greatest warrior of his age. Most Christians also thought that Constantinople was an eternal imperial order. It was the historic Christian empire. Western Europeans had come in ever greater numbers, seeing the Queen of Cities, had seen the pilgrimage shrines in Palestine, and there was almost a sense, well, there will always be a Constantinople. It is the historic kingdom. Whatever the tensions and difficulties between Pope and Patriarch, between Western Emperor and Byzantine Emperor, there was this image of Constantinople across Western Europe. It's best expressed, for instance, in Norse sagas, where Constantinople is a fabulous land where many Norwegians and Swedes went to take service, gain privileges from the emperor, and then return to their homeland greatly enriched and trying to imitate Byzantine arts. There's actually coin types from Scandinavia based on Byzantine coins. There's a variety of ways in which these arts are transmitted. Therefore, the rapid demise of the empire in just about a generation after Basil's death was stunning. He died in 1025. By 1071, the empire had suffered a catastrophic defeat, and this eventually precipitated the First Crusade. And why this defeat occurred, why the Byzantine Empire was plunged into crisis, is the subject of another lecture. But it is extraordinary, probably to observers at the time, that such a splendid heritage could be cast away so readily by his heirs.